Welcome to Manager Tools Podcast. Today's topic, how to be effective in everyday conversations. Hi, this is Mike, and welcome back to Manager Tools. We spend a great deal of time on managerial communications, and for good reason. Managers rely on communications to achieve the very basic requirement of their role of aligning and inspiring others to achieve more than they could do on their own. But there are a lot of different kinds of communication. We've talked about meetings and feedback and coaching and late-stage coaching and delivering reviews, and there are hundreds more, including plain old conversations. Aren't conversations our most frequently used verbal communication form? So why does everyone want to know the right way to do all those other managerial communications, like feedback, like I really need to mention feedback, right? But nobody seems to ask about conversations. Well, in today's cast, we'll share the most valuable conversational communication tool you'll ever learn, or at least those that your mom didn't teach you. Now, one point before we go on, though. There are probably a couple of folks, one or two, who will feel an almost overwhelming desire to give Mark and me some feedback, reference our lack of following our own principles during this quote-unquote conversation. Folks, this is an informational interview, and as such, it's a little bit different than the conversations we're discussing in this podcast. Just thought I'd mention that. My inbox is challenging enough, and I don't need any more. Thank you. So, with that email-killing bit of information, here we go. I find it really funny that the art of conversation isn't taught anywhere. You know, just another example of why management is so difficult for so many people. Why do you think that is?
Well, I think what's interesting about it is we no one would assume that you're supposed to teach conversation, right? I guess it would, because kids converse with their parents, you'd assume that parents would be the first one to teach it. So it's just another one of those things that relates to management that is so, it's just personality school of thought. And it's the, we don't have to teach that because everybody knows how to do it. You agree?
I absolutely agree. But they really don't teach conversations, do they?
No. On the other hand, I feel that you're getting ready to tell me, you're getting ready to share a, let me tell you about a horrible conversation I had recently. Am I right?
Yeah, I think you actually just saved yourself and our listener and our listeners. So I'm sure they appreciate you stopping me going down that path. So I'll save that story for a later time. But, you know, suffice it to say, we've all had those moments, right? And of course, they're not confined to managers, are they?
No, some executives are absolutely full of their own gaffes. That's for sure. I think everybody can admit to being painted with that brush, and malapropisms, one of my favorite things, are the least of it.
Malapropisms. If everybody wants to know how to spell that so they can go look that up, just send me an email because I have the show notes.
You have to know who Mrs. Malaprop is. You'd actually have to know something about literature, but this is not a cast about literature.
Well, I just thought I'd use this as another example of why it'd be good to buy premium content.
Yeah. Oh, that's – I'm sorry. Me – not that I'm the sales and marketing guy or anything.
Yeah, come
what's
on,
funny
work
about
on
that is I was going to say – I was going to do a shout out to our British listeners because I'm sure our British listeners know what a malapropism is, or at least a higher percentage of them know, separate from the fact that I'm sure they do a better job of teaching English literature or English writing and in English and British schools. But yeah, they probably have a higher percentage of people who know what a malapropism than Americans, or for that matter, the rest of our international listeners.
So, okay. So, sorry, folks, for that little.
Oh, that is going to go down. If there's ever a vote among our listeners about the most worthless tangent ever,
that would be it.
I started it.
Great.
Anyway,
super.
Sorry.
Thanks for pointing that out.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm trying to transition back to the show.
I'm sorry. The whole thanks. Really appreciate that.
Yeah, just stop laughing at me for 1 second. Would you?
Go ahead.
So we agree it's not taught, but you know the point is we do this all the time, right? Every day we're in conversations, and every day, a lot of us, including myself, we're messing it up. So the great thing about this is it's one of those areas where you don't have to be great. You don't have to be a Mark Horseman when it comes to conversations. You just have to be a little better than everyone else.
That is both a great point, and now I'm a marked man. Every conversation I ever have with a listener for the rest of time, if I ever have a malapropism or a gaffe or anything ever, they're going to say, gee, I thought you were a good conversationalist.
Yeah, but at least you weren't responsible for the greatest diversion we ever took on a podcast.
Yeah, that's right. No, that wasn't me. That was someone else entirely. But yeah, you make a very good point. When everyone else is really bad at it, and it's one of those hidden things that people don't think about or just assume that it's you take for granted. If there is no attention being paid widely, the key approach is to not try to be great at it. It's just to be 1% better than everybody else. And that's not that hard to do.
Yeah, but you know, I'm a little worried though, because this could be a very long cast. It's a pretty big topic.
Yeah, you know, I think you're right, and that's why we're only tackling one tool in the manager's toolbox around conversations on this cast. I do think we could do a whole series on this, and it may be one of those series that other people that wouldn't necessarily be thinking of themselves as managers would come and want, and that'd be great. But for this cast, we're focusing on managers, and we're focusing on the day-to-day communications, the most frequent thing you do, which is conversation. And I really think that after this cast, everybody who applies this manager tool will immediately be more effective in conversations.
That is a bold statement.
Yep.
But we know it's true. Right? So let's get started. How are we going to deliver this powerful tool we're talking about?
You'd probably think that the most powerful conversational tool, the most powerful manager tool when it comes to conversation, we wouldn't have 5 bullet points or 3.2 steps. We just have the one point. But hey,
you think?
Yeah, this is manager tools. Managers always have more than one bullet on their slide.
And what are those bullets?
We're going to be pretty simple. We have an introductory point and then our main point. So it's really only 2 bullets, only one of which is the big one. And they are. We're going to start. I want to do a brief introduction and then start with an important point that I think a lot of people miss, that in fact I missed until I spent over a year in sales, which is all communication is persuasion. And it's a theoretical, it's a sort of a background point, and we don't want to belabor it, but I think it's important for people to understand this. And then the second one, the powerful tool is when it comes to communication, if you want to immediately be better, learn this simple rule, which is start with a statement and end with a question.
This is a simple cast. No two ways about it, but powerful usually is simple. So start us off on persuasion.
Okay. I spend a lot of time with client managers and executives working on this when they're struggling, bringing a team together, gaining consensus, working across boundaries, all those things that in the last 10 or 15 years, the management literature has talked about as being important, and you have to be open, you have to be diverse and all that kind of stuff. And persuasion has gained a lot of credibility, a lot of traction, quite frankly, I perceive in the last 20 years or so. At least in my career, it may have been around forever, and people have been talking about it. But I feel like it's left academia to some degree, and it's gotten in more widely used than just persuasion. I think it was a dirty tool before, and I think now effective managers know that you just can't be yourself all the time with everyone and get everything you want and need. Effective managers know that we're always, all of us, are in a constant state of building and destroying relationships. Or put it differently, we're always trying, perhaps, to build relationships, although sometimes we destroy relationships. And as I like to say, margins and relationships are both the same. They're always decaying. So we don't have to destroy relationships. Just not working on building them causes them to be destroyed over time. So effective managers know that. Like it or not, relationships, roles, and the formal roles and the relationships that go around those are constantly in flux. And we're nearly every moment we're communicating or not communicating with someone having an effect on those roles and relationships around us.
Yeah. And anyone who's ever had an email that they send out that created these hugely unintended consequences knows that lesson. I sent out an email one time to a peer of mine in a kind of a heated moment. And oh my God, I was smart enough to realize like half an hour after sending it that, ooh, I think I need to go make a personal visit to this person's office. Debbie, you'll know.
Oh yeah. Listen to this. Oh gosh.
You'll remember. And she was spitting. I mean, literally just like spittle was flying out of her mouth as she was giving me feedback about my email.
Well, even if you're a fairly new listener and you're you're not a manager yet, you know, even if you haven't done it yet, you haven't stepped into the puddle yet, you know what it means when somebody tries to retract an email message. So many of our listeners are on Outlook or Exchange servers or on a common server, and there's some ability to retract a message. I must tell you, as much as I want to honor someone who's saying, no, I want to retract a message, and yes, usually it's a meeting notice or something like that, or it's a distro that was incorrectly, the wrong distro was sent for a particular message. But if I get a note saying that such and such sender is requesting to retract or has retracted that message, the first thing I do is I look for that first message.
No doubt about it.
What has gone so wrong that there needs to be a retraction? And there's something about train wrecks that are vaguely, darkly interesting to people.
Yes, absolutely. And that was a huge train wreck. But in any case, it occurs to me, and I think you would agree, that we really see that as an aberration. But it's really illustrative of this thing we're talking about. It's just proof of this rule in this real big, messy, train wreck way.
Yep. Yeah. Look, we don't think about this enough. We don't think about roles and relationships and communication and conversation and persuasion, the constant state of flux you're in, the dynamic ordering of people based on any given moment and what they're doing and so on. We don't think about it enough. Really good executives that I work with have mastered this. They know what other people want and they communicate in ways that make sense to the other person. Not to necessarily that makes sense to them, but to the other person. Now, I will say, I want to make a little caveat there. I find that to be true among executives. Careful, folks, when you see a bunch of executives talking, if you're not at their level, if you're a couple levels down and you see some executives working together, a lot of times managers observing executives working together make a mistake and they don't think that they see executives changing their delivery for different people. And part of the reason for that, I'm just going to be very blunt, is there are a lot of high Ds, dominant people, at the top of larger organizations. They don't necessarily have to do it. If you're not at their level and you're particularly not a dominant person, you won't see some of the subtleties as easily as if you were at their level and if you shared their natural communication style, because you could see the subtleties if you were at that level. You won't see it if you're a couple of levels down. So don't assume that just because you always see that particular CFO or COO being very direct and very forceful, don't assume that she is always being herself. She's actually subtly making adjustments to another dominant person in the room. You have to see them working with different groups, disparate groups, in order to see them really working on it.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned D, which of course which is part of DISC, and that's why we like it so much. I mean, paying attention to others is necessary for success, but most folks don't have a way to do it. And DISC is great for that.
Yeah. Look, let me make this as simple as I can. You talked about powerful and simple. You were totally right. We all have ideas in our heads, right? Talking and communicating. Well, I suppose there are some people who have not an idea in their head at all. They're probably blissfully happy. But look, talking, communicating, the only reason to talk, the only reason to do that is to achieve the goal of getting what's in your head into my head. Okay? the only reason for you to say your idea out loud is because you don't think I have that idea in my head right now, and you want me to have it in my head right now. And part of the problem here when it comes to persuasion, and let's go back. I just want to remind everybody, the introductory point is all communication is persuasion. Okay. Part of the problem is that I have other ideas in my head, right? I got my own head going on, and you've got your ideas in your head. And too many people just assume that when you're talking, the other person's mind just suddenly becomes completely empty except for the masterful, lovely, beautiful syllables that roll off the tip of your tongue. But the part of the problem is I have other ideas in my head, to say nothing of the fact that some of those ideas might be in direct conflict with the idea you're verbalizing at me. And in fact, I think that's a lot more likely than most people realize, because if there is not any chance of conflict at all, you probably wouldn't be saying your idea out loud. You would assume that I get it. And look, whenever I go back to the roots of communication and persuasion, I always share this to remind people. And I've actually done this with some of my executives, and they kind of, some of them look at me funny. There's a great Zen koan, and it goes like this. A Japanese master received a university professor who came to inquire about Zen, the way of Zen. And the master served tea. He poured his visitor's cup full, and then he kept on pouring. The professor sits there and watches the overflow until he just can't constrain himself. And he says, "It's over full. No more will go in." And the master said, "Like this cup, you're full of your own opinions and speculations. How can I show you Zen unless you first empty your own cup?"
Yeah, we are so full of our own thoughts that it's hard to communicate.
Yeah, exactly. And particularly, you know what you just said? It's hard to communicate. Because the communication is what the listener does, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So when Mike is full of his thoughts, it's hard for Mike to communicate because he can't listen to me.
Well, it's even worse, because then we start multitasking, and then we add these bad writing skills in email and differing power levels.
Yeah.
It's really amazing. We're just not tribes all at war over our common languages.
Yeah. And look, okay, the key point here is that if you're communicating, you're trying to get your thought into my head. I am not going to let your thought take root in my head unless somehow you show its value to me. Sure, you can do that by your role. Sometimes the fact that you have a role that's a level or two or three or four above mine, it happens naturally. There's a form of essentially organizational role power and threat there. But unfortunately, all too often, for adults, that then affects your message. If the only thing that gets your message into my head is your role power, that's your persuasive tool, your message is definitely affected, and I would argue, in many cases, not for the positive when that happens. If you really want to truly communicate with people, to not browbeat, to not just give orders, you've got to verbally persuade. You've got to set aside your role power, particularly true for working with your directs, with whom you're in conversation all day. And how do we know that? Because everybody's always telling us, "Oh, I don't need to do one-on-ones. I talk to my people all the time."
Right.
But if you'd want to do something other than just give orders, you're in the business of persuading, because all communication is persuading.
Okay. So why is that important for the power tool we're going to talk about today?
Because conflict is something that destroys the chance for persuasion. And our tool is one that is designed to reduce conflict, or if we think of Zen, we would say increase harmony. Most conversations, if you watch one, are filled with moments of conflict. They're filled with them. Moments where people interrupt. Every interruption, by the way, folks, I don't care how high a D you are, you have essentially introduced conflict. You have reduced harmony. You've taken some of the, if there's a bowl of water in between two people that's filled with the water, represents harmony. Every time you interrupt, you just splash some of that water on the floor. We've all felt it. Even when someone doesn't understand, just lack of understanding. Or if the speaker inadvertently goes off track, that is a type of conflict. And they're not helping me get where I was going in the conversation.
We've got to pay attention to harmony. It makes sense.
Right.
Or the reduction of conflict in order to increase our chances of persuasion. That's what you're really saying.
Yeah. And if you by that. If you've ever been in a conversation, well, look, here's the most direct way I can put it. If you've ever been in a conversation where you knew you were trying to persuade someone and you felt a moment of tension and that tension worried you, you have had the learning moment, which is, ooh, tension, not feeling like I'm getting where I need to go. That is opposed. That is not helping me persuade this person. If you then put that together with the concept that all communication is persuasion because of what's in my head and so on, then you realize I've got to have a tool which increases harmony. And even if I make other mistakes, it reduces the conflict in the conversations that I'm having.
Okay. And we're saying you can do that simply by starting with a statement and then ending with a question.
Yep. Now, there are a bunch of other things you can do, but yes, I have found this is the single most powerful thing that I can do that doesn't take any thinking. Oh, there's a lot of conversational techniques we'll share over the years that are subtle, that take a little bit of cleverness or a little bit of thinking about the other person and where they're coming from and so on. Look, there are many things you can do to improve harmony and get to persuasion. Some of them you only use them in negotiations. Some of them you use in everyday discussions. This tool is one you don't hardly have to think about. You can use it all the time. And I'll tell you something else too. This is probably my favorite part of it, other than the fact the purpose of it is to increase harmony. And look, let me be very blunt about this. I know that because of my style, although I'm really not always this way on my on-air persona, but I know because of my style, I can reduce harmony pretty easily. Just like you said, Mike, I'm always splashing water out of the bowl. I need this, and I'll tell you why. The thing I like most about this is this tool can keep a conversation going almost forever. And people don't understand why it is that they don't really feel it. When you're using this tool in your head and working with it, people will be amazed at how you can keep a conversation going forever if necessary, which in many cases is great for extending the time away from a moment of tension. It definitely, this tool reduces the chance for awkwardness. And something else that most people don't think about in organizations today, where they mistakenly believe that all relationships all totally revolve around role power. I'm not saying role power is not important, but it doesn't totally revolve around it. This tool will help others believe that you are showing them a great deal of respect. And in fact, you can't use this tool for a while without feeling more respect for the other person, because it essentially says we're in a dynamic discussion here and I'm going to honor you by using this tool, and it will make it easier for you to talk to me and for you to hear me talking to you.
Yeah, and let's be clear here about this tool, because really we mean it exactly as it sounds. When you're in a conversation with somebody and it's your turn to talk, you simply start out with a statement, not a question.
Right.
And then you end with a question, not a statement.
Bingo. And there are people right now going, what? And they don't realize that a lot of times they start with questions, or they get asked a question and they respond with a question. Okay, I'm getting ahead of myself here. But look, using the conflict analogy, in a typical conversation, to some degree, it looks like a tennis match. Back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. In normal conversation, you speak when it's your turn or when you think it's your turn. And unfortunately, the moment you interrupt somebody, and half the world tends to interrupt and the other half tends to wait, in normal conversation, you speak when you think it's your turn, and half the argument says, well, it's my turn when I think it's my turn, regardless of whether the other person's not done talking, which is
that's the half
tension,
I'm on.
Tension and conflict. Frankly, sometimes it's not easy to tell when it's your turn. And as I've said, for many of us, we speak out of turn.
Yeah, and this is where our one breath rule comes from, right? It's just really to slow many of us down.
Right.
If you want to be effective in conversations, if you want to have a chance at persuasion, one of the quickest ways to destroy harmony is to interrupt the other person. Or put differently, to start talking before they're through talking. Oh, and people can see it. I mean, I, you know, several times in the last couple of minutes, I've interrupted you, and I'm sure it is clear to many of our listeners that it throws you off. There is a moment of hesitation. It throws you off your game, and it destroys the conversation. I did it on purpose to make a point. I wasn't demonstrating how stupid I am, not following our own advice. But people, you can hear it. You can hear it. So just stop interrupting.
Somebody even said to me once, you know, when you and Mike are on air – you interrupt a lot. And I said, gosh, I am so sorry. I look back and I listened and I talked to the person later and I said, you know, I don't see it. And so he actually said, like, just now you did it. And he was talking and I said, okay. He said, you interrupted me. I said, oh, now I don't want to get into this whole discussion of interjecting versus interrupting, but there is a difference.
There is.
I think, quite frankly, that the moment you interrupt, you destroy harmony. Maybe we could have started with an even simpler rule. Don't talk when the other person is talking. And by the way, what I liked about what you said is you said one of the ways to destroy harmony is interrupt the other person, or put differently, to start talking before they are through talking. Let me just be clear for those of you who like to interrupt. Even if you don't think you're interrupting, let us be clear about what the definition of interrupting is. Interrupting is to start talking before the other person is through talking. Interrupting, if you've decided that you have a burning desire to speak, it doesn't mean that it's not interrupting. It's still interrupting, even if you believe you are about to speak directly God's idea. The thing you are saying is so important that you will die if you don't speak it, it still technically is interrupting if you start talking before the other person is through talking. And I think the reason why a lot of people don't think they're interrupting is if I believe at that moment that my idea is more important than them, I'm not interrupting. No, the definition of interrupting really is to start talking before they're through talking. And I promise you, I think I've said this before. If you ever want to know who a boss is in a conversation and you don't know the two people who are talking, but you know it's a boss and a subordinate, wait 5 minutes, and you'll be able to know simply by counting who interrupts who more. Bosses interrupt
less.
And if you wonder why you don't hear great things from your subordinate sometimes, it's because you interrupt a lot, and you tell them, I don't care what you're saying. You reduce conflict, or you increase conflict, you reduce harmony, and people won't try to persuade you. And communication is degraded, and relationships are degraded, unless you want to rely on rule power. Okay.
Yeah, and
go ahead.
Additional hint, one additional point to made here. Some people think that interrupting is simply a way of saving the other person some breath. I'm so smart. I already know what you're saying. So I'm just trying to save you some time. Not so much.
Or as the high D's would, the dominant people would say, don't talk while I'm interrupting, or actually feel free to keep talking while I'm interrupting. It's not doing you any good. And I'm talking so loud, I know you can hear me and I'm not listening to you anyway.
Yeah. Classic.
Yeah. Okay. Look. Okay. So I'm a little bit of a rant there and I'm sorry. Let's be clear though of why you never simply ask a question, that you always respond to either a question, or if they don't ask a question, you make a statement first. Here's the second most important thing you're going to hear in this cast. No matter how simple it seems, smart conversationalists, and therefore effective managers, because they know they're in conversations all the time, never simply ask a question all by itself because a question is harder to perceive as indicating that you understood what the other person was saying before you formulated your question. You make a statement first to indicate comprehension, to add to respect, to increase harmony. And for those of you who are not liking the word harmony, Mike and I learned this the long way. We went to the military academy and then we were army officers. Harmony was not a word that was in our language, or maybe it wasn't yours, Mike. It wasn't in mine.
No.
But I have learned this through long, hard paying attention to communication and conversations. So you first make a statement to indicate that comprehension, to allow the other person to have spoken their piece, to have shown them respect, to build harmony, and then you ask your question. Maybe it's as simple as, I got it, or I see, or you're right, or or I don't know, or I hadn't thought of it that way, or okay, thanks, or thank you. But you must first catch their comments. And those phrases I just strung together, I've got it. I see. You're right. I don't know. I hadn't thought of it that way. Thank you. Gee, thanks. Let me think about that. Those are all easy statements to put in front of that burning desire to ask your question after you've been asked a question. And by the way, if you're in an interview and you get asked a question and you respond with a question, you're on shaky ground often. The point here is you must first, to increase the chance of harmony and reduce conflict, you must first catch their comments. You must first acknowledge their effort at persuading you. You must respect their foray, if you will, before you throw something back at them. You must allow them to hit the ball to you in a tennis match and say, okay, I know it's on my side of the net, or they won't respect your efforts at communicating with them. And when you ask the question back, they won't answer it.
Yeah, but that's not the only reason for this principle, though, right?
No. No. In fact, we were just that's just the sidelight of – that's not that, – that's just why we applied this to simply asking a question. That's why we say you make a statement first, okay? That's why you say something first, even when it seems to you that a question itself would be okay. This is particularly true for you conscientious high-C engineers, accountants. Somebody asked you a question, and a way to prove your intelligence and to show incisive knowledge that goes deeper than their vague, big-picture, sort of lumpy, sloppy question, you go, oh, I'm going to ask a tighter, more direct question. And you essentially, in showing yourself to be smarter, because maybe your question is way smarter, you also destroy harmony and increase conflict. But there is another point to make here as well. And that is, as I've said, never answer a question with a question.
That feels confrontational just saying it.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so now the other side of the tool, we don't start with a question. Okay. The first part is we accept what the other person said, right? I've talked before about the medicine ball. We're going to do a cast on the medicine ball. I'm sure there are thousands of people right now going, huh? What is he talking about, a medicine ball? I thought we were talking about a tennis match. But medicine ball is powerful. The first part is you've got to catch the medicine ball, and that means you make a statement. You give their you allow there to be space before you start talking about what you want to talk about. In fact, let me just be clear. The statement you make should be specifically and directly about what they said versus what you want to say. And then the second part is the question you're going to ask. And we recommend that you end virtually every one of your contributions to the conversation you're having with a question.
Okay, that sounds easy, but why is that?
Because it's their turn to talk. And you want them to not only know that, but you want them to be able to start what they say with a statement as well, which says, I heard you, I respect you.
Ah, okay. So this definitely feels like there's a lot of emphasis put on making it easier for the other person.
That's exactly right. Look, in fact, somebody told me once, Mark, you know that you're the tool about start with a statement, end with a question is really you're cheating me out of the middle part. And oh, folks, that's a later cast. Trust me, we don't have time for that today. The starting with a statement, end with a question are the bookends to the stuff you really want to say. The statement in the beginning is about accepting what they said, the other person said, and the question turns the ball back over to them. We're not even talking about what you really want to say, which, by the way, is what you're thinking about while the other person is talking. Start with a statement, end with a question. Doesn't mean that you have to boil everything down to one statement and one question. It simply says, to make the conversation go smoothly, accept what they say, and then tell them it's their turn to talk at the end. The middle part is what you are already good at talking about, and it's okay. Do whatever you normally do in a conversation, whatever you normally would say, include that in between your initial statement and the question you're going to end with and give it back to them. And you're going to be in great shape. Great conversationalists spend a lot of energy making the conversation easy for the other person. This is a function of accepting and then releasing. It is a way of moving towards harmony and increases the chances of you getting your point across, which is what you insert between the initial statement and the ending question.
Yeah, I get it. You know what this is? This is just a form of politeness.
Yep.
You know, we were just talking about a simple rule that you can follow to reduce the chances of getting in your own way, you know, of dominating the conversation, yep, or interrupting, yep, or stepping on your own goals. You know, really, you honor the other person when you start with a statement, and then you make it easy for them by asking and ending with a question.
I think that may be the best summing up we could have done. Let's add one thing. Please try this out. Take a few minutes to think about this technique, statement, and then ending with a question, and use it in your normal conversations. See what happens when you accept what the other person says first. You give a breath, if you will. You essentially say, I heard you. And then you say what you really wanted to say. And then you turn it back over to them with a question, which could be, how do you feel about that? Or what do you think? Or don't you agree? Or have you thought of it that way before? And see how much more easily things tend to occur.
Yeah. Cool. Sounds like it's time to sum up.
Yep. All communication is persuasion. And the most powerful communication tool when it comes to conversations that we know of is, before, regardless of what you want to say, put that in between the bookends of starting with a statement and ending with a question.
Excellent. All right. Thanks, my friend.
My pleasure, sir.
All righty, we'll see you later.
See ya.
Thanks, everyone. Hope you found that useful. Before I go, though, one quick note. We had promised a number of folks that we would leave the early premium content bonus up for a few days to help resolve some cash flow issues that people were having. So, if you haven't had a chance to sign up and get the special interviewing series, regularly $150 value, free with your paid annual premium membership, you'll have a few more days to sign up and get the special offer. We'll leave it up at least a week, but no longer than 2 weeks. So don't delay too much. If you don't know about the premium content, includes show notes and slides, and there's more information on the website, www.manager-tools.com. So if you haven't already, please check it out. All right, with that, until next week then, thanks everyone, and we'll see you later.